Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Johnson, Judge Hooten, the Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. You may be seated. I'm glad to see that you were here half an hour early so that we could get started. The first case has been rescheduled to 11 because one of the attorneys was in a car accident. But his car is fine. The car that hit him was totaled. So, but he'll be here by 11. Thank you. And so the first case on the calendar is State of Minnesota versus Gary Christopher Peterson. It's A18-1431. And I know that you are familiar with how the rules of court operate, but you will each have 15 minutes if you choose to use it, 5 minutes for rebuttal. The podium goes up and down if you want to adjust the height of it, and we're ready when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Adam Lozo, and I represent the appellant Gary Peterson. There are three main issues raised in the brief, but I'd like to focus my argument today on the denial of Mr. Peterson's right to a public trial. First, it's important to recognize this was a very significant closure of the courtroom. It was a total closure. All members of the public were excluded from the courtroom during 75% of voir dire.
Okay, but there were general questions asked of the panel, right?
After the individual voir dire was completed, about 25% of the voir dire was completed with general questioning, and it appears that the public was not excluded during that portion, that one quarter of voir dire.
Well, and there was an indication from the voir dire questionnaires that some of the, at least one and if not more, were concerned about the issues with regard to the question of whether you had been a victim or had been, I think the standard question is, have you ever been a victim of a crime?
I'm glad you brought that up because this needs to be crystal clear.
Okay,
There was one juror who in the questionnaires responded to the questionnaires that she would prefer to discuss this matter privately. There was one juror. 28 jurors were interviewed during the in the closed courtroom.
Well, let me ask you this, because there's crim sex cases going on every day.
That's right.
in our courts. And if you're asking, I know that when you talk about being a victim of a crim sex crime, it's not something people talk about usually. And I think as a district court judge, how are you going to assure that you get the information out from this jury panel mm-hmm. regarding these things that they don't talk about?
It's a good and important question. And
because that really helps your client, doesn't it, to know if they've been a victim of a crime, especially a crim sex crime?
I think it's an important thing for everyone to know. And
right.
And this question has been answered by case law, and it's directly answered in the rules of criminal procedure. And neither of those procedures were followed or even acknowledged by the court in this case.
All right, so what procedure specifically?
Yep,
all right, so we agree, I think we agree that that's an important consideration
absolutely.
For the district court, is to set it up in such a way that you get that information from the juror.
Absolutely. Correct? So in Press Enterprise, the court dealt with a situation where the state asserted a sort of general interest in juror privacy about sensitive topics. And the court said that a closure on that basis was not justified. But in Press Enterprise, and I'm talking about the United States Supreme Court here, addressing a closure during voir dire, the exact same issue here, said it was not justified on that basis, but did set forth a procedure that can be followed when potentially sensitive questioning is involved in a case. That's specifically in Press Enterprise, and our rules of criminal procedure reflected almost, well, not almost verbatim, but each step is reflected in our rules of criminal procedure. This is Rule 26.02. It talks about a specific process that must be followed before closing the courtroom on the basis of a juror's sensitivity to a topic. And again, this is to ensure that it's closed on the basis of a specific juror's sensitivity with a specific topic, not a general interest in juror confidentiality or privacy, as was asserted here. So I'm just going to pull out 2602 just to get it completely right. This is 2602 subdivision 2 section 3 talks about jury questionnaires and says specifically that the court must tell, and this was not done in the questionnaires submitted by the court in this case, the court must tell prospective jurors that if sensitive or embarrassing questions are included in the questionnaire, instead of answering those questions, and I'm just skipping forward here, that instead of answering any particular questions in writing, they may request an opportunity to address the court in camera with counsel and defendant present concerning their desire that the answers not be public. And then the rule requires application of subdivision 4.4 of that same rule to determine whether at that in-camera proceeding a closed courtroom should even be allowed. So the in-camera proceeding is not to perform the voir dire, it's to determine whether closed voir dire should even be permitted. So in subdivision 4.4, it talks about that voir dire must be open to the public, or this is subdivision 4.1, but voir dire must be open to the public unless ordered otherwise ordered under 4.4, which requires the court to apply the Waller factors.
Let me ask you this. I thought it was three people who said that they would rather talk privately.
That's not right.
Okay,
there was one. It was juror 333.
Applying the Waller factors, would you agree that with regard to that particular juror, that may have been a legitimate closure? But that as to the other 27, it was overly broad? Because it seems, and I'm going to ask the state this question too, because that's where I think the issue, where the rub comes.
I would agree that after proper inquiry into the question, the court could have potentially concluded that a closure was justified for that single juror on that topic that that juror expressed a privacy concern with. I would agree with that. That inquiry wasn't undertaken. Maybe after that inquiry, the court would have found out that closure wasn't appropriate. Maybe it would have been, maybe it wouldn't have been. It could be appropriate in that circumstance.
Well, as I understand, the juror said that she would talk about it, but she hadn't told anyone in her life about it.
Right. And in that situation, a closure for that juror on that topic probably could have been justified and constitutional. But a closure for 28 jurors on a wide range of topics on the basis of general juror privacy is plainly inconsistent with the requirements of the Constitution and the rules.
So that the individual voir dires went beyond that question.
Absolutely. The individual voir dire, it lasted hundreds of pages. It went far beyond simply the question of whether you have been a victim of sexual assault. Many different questions were asked. It lasted for hundreds of pages, 28 jurors, most of whom, well, only 27 of whom had not said they had any issues with privacy, and most of whom had not disclosed that they had been the victim of any crime, let alone sexual assault.
Would you have any, do you think it would be constitutionally permissible in a case such as this to have taken each juror individually as to that question, which is generally known to be sensitive, and individually question them as to that single question?
I think that what should have been done and what would be most clearly in compliance with the Constitution and the rules is in a case like this, in the questionnaire, to tell the jurors, which was not done again, if you have issues with this, let us know and we can conduct proceedings to determine whether a closure is justified. In this situation, only one of the jurors, as you noted, and in that situation, if that had been done and multiple jurors said, in response to that questionnaire question, I don't want to discuss this publicly, then it would be in compliance with the Constitution and the rules to hold in-camera proceedings to determine whether those jurors' voir dire should be taken privately.
Well,
But that's obviously a very different situation than what happened here. But yes, there are ways in the under press enterprise in the Constitution and under the rules to get at this issue without just closing the courtroom automatically based on a general concern that the jurors would be more comfortable.
Okay, so you will concede, I guess, to the point that if a juror does express some sensitivity to a question, that should be something that's done in camera.
That at least an inquiry should be done in camera as to whether the voir dire should be closed for that juror on that topic, yes. And that's in compliance with the Constitution and the rules, yes.
All right, because there's another issue is whether you just single out that juror or because you know generally that this is a sensitive topic, that people may not even want to put anything in writing about it, whether the court decides I'm not going to single out this juror, because then the other jurors will be saying, well, why are they singled out for this individual? I mean, would that be an appropriate under the Constitution to ask every juror, because it's generally known that that's a sensitive question?
Well, again, granting that this is a very different scenario than what happened here, I don't think that it would be appropriate to individually question everyone on that topic regardless of their issues, because Press Enterprise notes that individual questioning should only be held when a specific juror actually has matters that are deeply personal that it's understandable to want to keep out of the public domain. But again, it's important to note that Press Enterprise and the rules address this situation so that the potential juror doesn't even need to put down in their questionnaire what happened. This juror, if the rules had been followed, this juror would not have even need to put down on the questionnaire what happened to her.
The juror could have said,
I don't want to answer that publicly, and then there would have been an in-camera proceeding to determine.
As a defense attorney, though, I mean, a lot of people, they're so sensitive about this, mm-hmm. that how do you know they're even going to put anything down, because they don't want to draw attention to it, because they don't want to tell anyone, because they've never told anyone. And as a district court judge, a mm-hmm. former district court judge, I can't tell you how many people I had, including a 74-year-old man once, says, I've never told anyone about this incident.
Well, I don't think...
How is a judge to assure, for the protection of the defendant, actually, that we don't have a jury of victims there that literally don't want to disclose it?
I think that all you can do is follow the Constitution and follow the rules, which require when a questionnaire is given to the jury, for the jury to have the opportunity to not answer a question in writing, to say, I would like to address this matter privately. And if the juror gives that answer, under the rules, the hearing must be conducted. An in-camera proceeding must be conducted. And at that proceeding, which the public would be excluded, no one would be there except for the parties, everyone would be excluded, including the other jurors, which is another aspect of this case. They were also excluded from all of this individual questioning. But in that situation, I don't think that there's any way practically to ensure that people tell the truth or that they disclose everything they should disclose, but they can just be given the best opportunity to do so, which the Constitution and the rules do.
Isn't it true that if the district court fails to make findings, that the typical remedy in Minnesota is to remand to the district court for an evidentiary hearing and for findings?
That has happened before, but I don't think it's the appropriate disposition in this case. There are two reasons for that. The main reason is that this court can look at the record. This court can look at the record and determine that there was no basis to close the courtroom for all 28 jurors. Even setting aside the state's asserted bases that the jurors might be more comfortable with privacy, the record reveals that even if all of the state's asserted interests were valid and overrode the right to the public trial, 9 of the jurors that were questioned in this closed proceeding answered none of the questions affirmatively that the state argues justified closing the courtroom. There does not need to be any remand for findings, and there shouldn't be, because the record is clear in this case that this closure was not justified by any asserted overriding interest. If there was an interest in a single juror in privacy, it was far broader than necessary. The court didn't consider or implement any reasonable alternatives to the closure, and it didn't make any findings. The court didn't make any factual findings to support the closure, as the rules also require it to do.
But let me ask you this. I mean, you're saying it should just be certain people that are brought out. Well, is that a problem, though, because you're sending a message to the other jurors? These jurors are pretty smart. Oh, these were just the people that had some kind of sex abuse in their background, or they had some kind of, they were victims.
I mean,
are you sending a message?
I don't think so, because there would be no way for the jurors to know which there would be no way for the jurors to know what was being talked about. There would be no way for the jurors to know which question that person answered affirmatively, or if it was even related to the questionnaire. I don't think that bringing someone from the jury room to conduct a in-camera proceeding where no one else is present would send any particular signal about what that juror may or may not have answered on the questionnaire. That person could be being interviewed in camera for any reason related to jury selection, including any answer that they gave on their questionnaire. Jurors certainly are smart, but I don't think that with no context or no information about what's happening, that they would be able to accurately guess which question that person answered in what way.
This doesn't bear on the analysis. It's just a point of curiosity. Of those 28 jurors who were questioned in camera, how many were struck with either for cause or peremptorily, and by whom?
I don't know, because as you noted, it doesn't matter for the analysis. I don't know, and I don't have that document with me. Okay. It is, of course, in the record. But related to the, I'll address that on rebuttal. Thank you.
Well, I have one more question. Because here we know that 17 of the 28 prospective jurors said that they were victims of sex abuse or were close to someone who had been victims. And again, I mean, so we've got, a good number of that 28 that they answered the questionnaire. But I mean, because it's generally known that this is a sensitive topic for a lot of people, I mean, did the judge, by doing it in camera, increase the privacy of these people so that they could more openly talk about their prior experiences?
So a couple.
I mean, and wouldn't that in effect assist you or any defense attorney in representing his client, her client?
I apologize for going over time, but I do have a few answers to that. First of all, you mentioned 17 of the 28, and it's true that 15 of the 28, two of the jurors that the state cited actually didn't give that answer in their questionnaires, but 15 of the 28 did give that answer, so roughly half of the people who were questioned in the closed courtroom. And those answers ranged from, juror 333, who disclosed her prior history of abuse, to people who said things like, yes, my mother was abused 30 years ago, or I knew someone who had been abused when we were teenagers. So whether the fact you knew someone who had been abused as a teenager actually implicates your own privacy interests to the extent that it overrides the right to a public trial when you don't even need to name who this person is and it's not even your own privacy interest, I think is a question that would be appropriately addressed, if at all, in camera, as the rules require, rather than simply ordering that voir dire closed. And to your point about whether it's better for the defense to get these questions out, I think that you're right that it's better for all parties to have honest answers in voir dire, but I think it's also, and while I'm here representing, of course, Mr. Peterson, the Supreme Court has also explicitly recognized that this is a right for the benefit of the defendant, but it's also a right held by the public and the press. And that while there are parts of this, while it was a violation of Mr. Peterson's right, and it's structural error because it's related to the fairness of his trial proceedings, there are also other rights involved here of the public and the press to know what's going on in Minnesota's courtrooms. And so while the concerns of the parties of getting truthful answers is very important, there's another interest at play there as well. And if the rules regarding closing the courtroom had been followed here, a Well, I don't want to go over my time, so if you have other questions, we can answer it in rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Kelsey Kelly, and I represent the state of Minnesota in this matter. Mr. Peterson's Sixth Amendment right to a public trial was not violated based on the courtroom closure in this case.
Wasn't it overbroad?
Your Honor, it's because we need to look at it in the context of a criminal sexual conduct case. What was originally alleged was first-degree criminal sexual conduct, which was he was acquitted of that, but he was convicted of second-degree criminal sexual conduct. We also need to look at it in the context of the attorneys knowing that these videos are coming in. It's actually quite rare in my experience for a video of criminal sexual conduct to be entered into evidence. So I actually think it's more important for these people to be individually questioned without the public there so that we can have completely honest answers. Yes.
Well, and here's what I don't understand. I understand it's probably a judgment call from the court that with regard to the sensitive questions about being a victim of a crim sex crime, that you want to give some privacy because you want the juror to be as open as possible, and it's very hard for people to discuss these issues and before the public. I understand all that, and I think there was maybe even a stronger argument or another argument that could be made that you extend that to every juror because you want to get the best information you can from that juror and set it up, and you do that on behalf of the defendant. What I don't understand in this case, though, is why, with regard to all other issues, the juror needed to be questioned individually?
I think it's because based on the questionnaires, obviously the questions about were you a victim of physical or sexual abuse, anyone you know a victim of physical or sexual abuse, the questions were also present about did you ever witness a crime, have you ever known anyone to be a victim of a crime? Have you ever been a victim of a crime? So, of course, that extends out into, I guess, what you would call property crimes. And I think the purpose behind it is someone may not want to write down that they were a victim of sexual abuse, but they might broadly say, well, I've been generally a victim of a crime. So I think the point was to cast a net where you could bring people into private to try to elicit that information and to give people an open chance to talk about criminal sexual conduct.
Well, but can't you do that by just questioning them as to that topic individually without doing the general voir dire for each individual juror in a closed setting?
Your Honor, I think that is possible. However, if you look at the transcript, the defense attorney also was able to make some headway with some of the jurors to try to get sensitive information out of them. I think by having people in private, it gave them a longer period of time to try to come out, explain sensitive information about themselves, family members, or friends. I believe the defense attorney said three different times, kind of essentially like, come on, you can tell us, we're in private. So as you were saying before, it actually did really benefit the defendant in addition to the state, especially where the state knows it's going to be bringing in these videos, which it's even more sensitive than normal crim sex, where someone's just describing it, you're actually seeing it. So I think that it was even more important in this case than maybe even certain other criminal sexual conduct cases to try as much as they could to try to eliminate the prejudice against the defendant in the jury pool.
Do you think that Rule 26 was followed in this case?
No, I don't. I do not think that, but that's different than a Sixth Amendment constitutional violation. The remedy for a rule violation is not reversal. I think we need to actually look at the Waller factors. That's much more determinative of what should happen here, not Rule 26.
Well, and I read the Fagerus, if that's how you pronounce it, case, where it's remanded, although Esther Tomjanovich said it should just go back for a new trial.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand how a remand would work.
So
Judge O'Fallon has retired.
Yes, he has. I think because he's at retired status, though, he is still allowed to come back and take the bench.
If he chooses.
Yes. However, if you look at Judge O'Fallon's findings, I actually don't think a remand is necessary. Obviously, a remand is much better than reversal, and that's what I would ask for if you're even considering a reversal. But Judge O'Fallon actually does go through the transcript and talk about the privacy concerns. He goes back and forth with the prosecutor and the defense attorney about the privacy interests, how we need to get honest answers out of these people, and he does make those findings. He makes what's required under Waller, the findings adequate to support the closure. He did make those findings actually a couple different times, and even during voir dire, the most emotional part of individual voir dire where the woman is explaining, this is the first time she's making this disclosure of criminal sexual conduct, Judge O'Fallon actually says, this is a class reason why we close the courtroom. So he actually kind of continues adding to the record as individual voir dire is going.
So for me, it's factors 2 and 3. The closure is no broader than necessary. And that's 2 and 3 is the district court considers reasonable alternatives to closing the proceeding. And it certainly seems that going beyond specific instances of sexual abuse into all kinds of other topics in a closed setting, I don't consider that a reasonable alternative.
Okay. Well, the issue here, Your Honor, is I guess the district court could have taken the entire panel and asked them in private, but I don't think it's a good idea to take a really small section and only ask them about criminal sexual conduct, because then when they come back to the pool, the entire pool knows, oh, those people must be victims of criminal sexual conduct. And I think the issue is jurors want to keep that guarded, and that if they know, everyone knows they're in the courtroom because they were a victim of crim sex, they're going to come back, and the pool, then when they're deliberating possibly later, they're going to be like, well, why should we listen to you? You're going to look at this totally differently, because there's still the stigma about sexual abuse in our society.
Well, but what about just asking each juror in the pool the single question in a closed setting? I mean, then everyone's in the closed setting, and no one knows what was said in that setting.
I think
and then you avoid that situation that you've just described where there's some stigma because they must have answered the question that they're a victim, and the jurors do and will figure that out.
Your Honor, I think
because no one will know.
I think from a practical reality, you are a district court judge, and so I know that you know when you are going through voir dire, frequently a juror warms up to you after time. That's just the way people are, especially when you're talking about abuse. When you're looking at it from above, of course that sounds better. But when you're actually talking about real humans who are all together, they're totally strangers coming, and then also being in the courtroom with total strangers, you know that they warm up to you over time. So the best way to get honest answers out of them is to, you know, build rapport. That's what we're all taught as prosecutors. You need to kind of warm up to these people to try to get honest answers. So I think that's part of what was going on here. The district court was trying to set the type of atmosphere where eventually they could get to the truth about these jurors.
But another alternative is you ask the general questions of the jury with the understanding with counsel that you don't get into the sexual abuse questions in a public setting, and then recess the jury and then ask them individually.
Yes.
The sensitive questions in camera.
Yes. Your Honor, I think that could have...
satisfy everyone's needs.
I think that could have happened. However, that actually wasn't offered by either of the attorneys as an alternative. And actually, when the defense attorney was talking to the judge back and forth, Judge O'Fallon said, well, I think that there's confidentiality issues. And the defense attorney actually responded back, well, if you're more comfortable with that, that's fine. So why would the district court judge have a reason to think, oh, I need to come up with something better if Carol Comp just told me that this is just fine?
Well, what is the effect of the defense attorney's agreement that that's fine?
Well,
I mean, how should that be factored into our analysis?
I think it needs to be factored in based on the fact that the defendant also benefits from this courtroom closure, and that we can see that from the defense attorney's comments throughout voir dire. There's a footnote in my brief with 3 separate instances where the defense attorney is saying, oh, we're in private, so you can discuss this now. So I think that her comment goes to the fact that it actually does go to the heart of the issue of getting honest answers out of these jurors.
So what do we do? I mean, if in fact we think the judge went too far, what how would you respond to what we should do in that situation?
Well, are you asking me whether the judge...
Whether the judge's closure was overbroad.
Okay. Whether the judge's closure was overbroad in terms of best practices or as a constitutional violation, because
both.
I think there's a big difference.
Well, okay. Well, so, I think on best practices we can agree.
Yes,
we do. That's not the best practice.
Yes.
All right. So I think we can agree. But is this a constitutional violation, which is really what's before us?
Your Honor, for all the reasons I've said before, I don't think this rises to a constitutional violation, especially where the defendant also benefited from this. However, if the court were to find this to be a Sixth Amendment violation, I would ask the court to remand it to the district court for further findings. I'm fairly confident Judge O'Fallon would be willing to come back.
Well, can I ask you this? I know you have these sensitive videos, and it's not often we see
yes.
videos like what you had in this case. Were the jurors questioned about their sensitivity to viewing things like this? Did that come up during voir dire? Or?
Your Honor, I haven't read the voir dire transcript in its entirety for about 2 or 3 months, but I don't believe they were explicitly asked about videos.
Okay.
I think that they were asked questions of generally about criminal sexual conduct.
Okay.
However, maybe opposing counsel will correct me, but...
I am trying to square your argument that the closure should be considered trivial. It was closed for a narrow purpose and during a small portion of the trial proceedings, where opposing counsel says it was not a small portion of the trial proceedings, it was pages and pages and pages of trial proceedings.
Your Honor, so I know you were also a district court judge. As I think we all know, voir dire goes so much faster than trial does, so even though it's correct, it was 252 pages of the transcript. However, in terms of time, it was much shorter in time than the rest of the trial. So obviously, I can't possibly argue that based on the pages in the transcript that it was less, but based on time, when you're just going back and forth with one person who is not trying to be hostile to you and is not offering evidence, and you're not getting up, offering evidence, passing out everything to the jury, it goes much faster. So part of my argument goes to the time frame involved, the fact that general voir dire was still open to the public. All of the evidence that came in, opening, the examinations, all of the videos, closing, those were all totally open to the public. Obviously, the defendant does have a right to an open trial, including voir dire, unless we get to the Waller factors, but it's my understanding that most people come to the trial to see the evidence. They're not usually there to see individual voir dire. However, I do understand that there is a constitutional issue with that.
U.S. Supreme Court opinion in Presley, which concerned voir dire proceedings, made no exceptions or qualifications for voir dire, right?
That's correct. We would still have to go through the Waller factors.
And to be trivial, some of the triviality factors are whether the courtroom was ever cleared of all spectators, and it was here. Correct?
Yes, it was. There is no record, however, about who that was in the courtroom. We don't have a record saying the defendant's family was cleared from the courtroom. We don't have a record that says the press was cleared from the courtroom. But we do have a record where the judge says, I'm closing the courtroom. The
second factor is whether the judge told people they're welcome to stay.
He did not.
Or third factor, whether the trial remained open to the public and the press who are already there. That didn't happen, did it?
No, Your Honor. But as I said before, the record isn't there about who explicitly was removed, so I don't think we can necessarily assume that some of those types of people were there.
Can you direct us to a case? I can't believe this issue hasn't come up before, because of all the crim sex cases that we have in our judicial system, as well as the statistics that 1 in 3 women have been a victim of criminal sexual conduct, sex crimes.
Yes.
So when you have those kind of statistics that we have, I can't believe this issue hasn't come up in some context. Is there any case that you think that we should be looking at that best supports your position?
Your Honor, there is not a case exactly on point, which is why I had to cite numerous cases involving courtroom closure. I think to protect actual direct testimony of a rival gang member. There was courtroom closure for, I think courtroom closure for children when they testify to try to protect them, to try to get them to testify honestly. I kind of had to make the analogy between what happened in my case to multiple other cases. And when I looked at those other cases where the convictions were affirmed, there were, in my opinion, more significant portions of a trial, and by significant I mean actual testimony of a victim that is going to be used to convict the defendant, where it was affirmed. And so I had to analogize. I do think that this case is appropriate for a public opinion, because I think that part of why the district court, I think the district court judge did the best that he thought he could in the context of what was happening, that there's not a lot of guidance from the appellate courts, and we need that for the district courts.
And what would your syllabus point be?
Your Honor, I think the Waller factors should be the primary concern in the case, the exact syllabus point. I do think in the future it's best to say the best practice is to follow the rule of criminal procedure. However, I think the Waller factors, not necessarily Lindsay and Brown, where I talk about the trivial nature. I think what's really at the meat of this argument is the Waller factors and talking about the district court judge making explicit findings, perhaps as to every portion of what they're closing to. You'll be more concise, but yeah.
So you think if we're concerned about overbreath, you think the judge should be given the opportunity to make explicit findings as to why he extended it, the voir dire, beyond the sexual abuse questions?
Yes, Your Honor. I do think the judge should be given that opportunity, because I think what the judge here would be able to do is, he kept saying privacy issues, or confidentiality concerns. The judge could be asked to make explicit findings as to each person he allowed to be individually voir dired and why that was necessary. And I do think he should be given that opportunity, especially based on the lack of guidance from the appellate courts. I think what he did is actually in accordance with Waller. He did make the findings. But if it's not as specific as it needs to be, I do think it should be remanded for those findings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just starting with a factual point, the questionnaire did ask, this case involves an allegation of physical injury and will include video of the injuries being inflicted. Is there any reason that you would be unwilling or unable to listen to such evidence or testimony? No juror responded that they wanted to discuss that matter privately. Secondly, regarding whether this is a...
Can I just follow up?
Yeah. Yep.
Were they asked, though, about their sensitivity? Because some people won't watch horror films. Other people love
right.
horror films. Was that discussed with the jurors and on voir dire about how
during the question, individual voir dire
yes.
questioning?
Yes.
To my memory, that question was asked of some of the jurors. That's to my memory. Regarding whether this is a constitutional violation or a rules violation, it's both. The rules directly reflect the Supreme Court's decision in Press Enterprise. It really couldn't be clearer. And the Supreme Court's decision in Press Enterprise was based on analysis of the Waller factors. The Press Enterprise discusses how to apply the Waller factors in this specific situation, which is why I think it was interesting and important that you ask counsel whether there is a case that's on point here. There is. It's Press Enterprise. Press Enterprise involved sexual assault of a teenage girl. The privacy issue at issue in Press Enterprise was whether jurors were able to be questioned regarding sexual abuse, things like that. And the court said a general interest in privacy, as asserted here, did not justify closing the courtroom, and set forth a specific procedure that we already discussed at length for balancing the defendant's and the public's right to a public trial with those particular jurors who have legitimate reasons not to want to publicly disclose information. It's constitutional law. This court doesn't need to break any new ground. All this court needs to do is apply the clearly stated constitutional law in Waller regarding the factors, which none of them support the closure here, at most for one juror's questioning on one topic. All this court needs to do...
This case needs to be published.
I would love for this case to be published.
What would your syllabus point be?
What's that?
What would your syllabus point be?
My syllabus point would be that that the closure of the courtroom in this case did not comply with the Constitution, did not comply with the rules, and this wouldn't be a syllabus point, but the reason that this case is being published is because Minnesota's appellate courts have been confronting this issue of closures more and more often, and the courts have been getting more and more concerned and cautioning district courts more and more to be very, very careful and apply careful analysis when closing a courtroom. And I think that is the reason to publish the opinion, because the clear case law of the Supreme Court was not followed, the rules were not followed, the public was completely excluded for the voir dire of 28 jurors. I think that this is an appropriate an appropriate and clear case in which to apply the current law and to apply the current law and to make clear that it is the law.
But I noticed in your briefing that you cited mostly dissents of our Minnesota
When I was talking about the sort of development of this frustration of the judiciary with courtroom closures that in those dissenters' opinions were being given without careful consideration. I think it's also important to note that Justice Page switched from a majority member saying, "Oh, this courtroom closure is fine," to saying, "Actually, I've rethought about this." But the dissents are
I mean, we're an error correcting court, so whatever the Minnesota Supreme Court's view of this is.
Yeah.
As to what constitutes a trivial closing or...
Right. And if this court has any questions about whether it was trivial, I'd certainly entertain those. I don't think that that is any basis to affirm the conviction here.
I want to ask you a question.
Yes, absolutely.
That I asked the respondent here, and that's what legal effect does the statement of the defense attorney here that, yes, Judge, that's fine?
Glad you brought that up. I want to cover that.
Because I think that's an important part of this case, because...
There are several important considerations there, and I think it's important to note that the attorney did object and offer reasonable alternatives twice. She twice said that this closure wasn't necessary. She twice said that we should only be doing individual voir dire for the people who express concern about sharing information publicly in their questionnaires.
Okay, so she was agreeing to individual questionnaire of all issues to anyone that expressed concerns. Is that what
her moment at the very end of this back and forth where she said that's fine was leaving the decision to the court? She said what the court wants to do, what the court's decision is fine. It was inartful, but she had twice said it wasn't necessary. She had twice offered a reasonable alternative, and she left the decision up to the court, which is why the court ultimately said, "Okay, I'm going to close the courtroom."
But again, we have two issues going here, and that's what I want to understand.
Okay.
Because one issue is that is whether each individual juror should have been questioned as to all questions in a closed courtroom. All right. Was that raised as an objection as to each individual juror by this defense attorney?
Yes. So the way that this went down, and I've got the transcript.
Because there's a difference. And then the other issue, just so I can let you answer all of my questions at once, is I think it was clear that she objected to the questioning of any juror in a closed courtroom who did not express concerns on the voir dire.
Correct.
So you'd only be questioning the one juror.
That's right.
All right, so that's clear from the record. But it's not clear from the record, and maybe you can correct me. Did she ever object to the full questioning of that individual juror as to all questions above and beyond
of specifically juror 333?
Well, in other words, did she ever object to the juror being questioned above and beyond the sex abuse issues in a closed setting?
I guess the best way that I can answer that is that the state asked for the courtroom to be closed, and this is a quote from the transcript, during that private questioning, during private questioning, and so the state asked for it to be closed during all of individual voir dire. The defense attorney responded that that she didn't believe that it was necessary to exclude everyone during all individual questioning, maybe just specifically for those people who expressed concern in their jury questionnaire. The court said that the reason to do this was because of, quote, confidentiality issues. And the attorney again said that she didn't think it was necessary to close it and for all of individual voir dire, and that only a handful of people, which was incorrect, it was only one person within these jury questionnaires, stated that they had concerns about sharing information publicly. She said twice it wasn't necessary. She offered reasonable alternatives twice. The court rejected that reasonable alternative. And I think that regarding that point, there are just two very brief, important points that go to that question. First of all, I think that this is clearly an objection and offering of a reasonable alternative that's not considered. But also, under the rules, this is a decision made by the court. The court has the inherent authority to control the courtroom. This is the court's decision. It violated the defendant's Sixth Amendment right in any case. And finally, this is structural error under State v. Brown. This is a Minnesota Supreme Court case, 2007. Structural error is invalidate a conviction whether or not a timely objection to the error was made. So I think that there's clearly a timely objection twice, and offering of an alternative and leaving the decision up to the court. But even if not, it's the court's decision and it's structural error and an objection is irrelevant.
But did she object to that single individual that she apparently said, let's just question that individual, to that individual being questioned as to all issues?
She,
in a closed setting.
She didn't
object to that.
She didn't specifically say you have to limit that juror's questioning to the one question on which she answered correctly.
Okay.
Or answered
that, was my
that she wanted to be private.
I wanted to make sure that that's clear. I mean,
right, there was no specific discussion of juror 333 at all.
Thank you. You can see that we've allowed you both more time than we ordinarily do, but it's a really important and interesting case.
Thank you.
Thank you for your briefing and argument.